I'm Michael Goldfarb in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Book publishing is a dicey business. You didn't think it was about art, did you? No, it's about making money, keeping your job, going to nice restaurants with your authors. The product, a book, takes a long time to create. The R&D budget on the product can be blown years before the book hits the shelf, by which time tastes may have changed and the book may fail to find readers. Then there's the sense that fewer and fewer people are actually reading at all. All the problems of the industry are amplified when it comes to publishing fiction. But here's a marketing fact that poses a puzzle and offers a challenge to those who publish fiction. Men don't read it. Now that's odd because we live in a golden age of fiction writing, much of it written by men, yet best estimates are that less than half of all men buy novels or short story collections. Figure out why and how to change that, and you just might have the keys to the publishing kingdom. We're talking about the vanishing male fiction reader in this hour. Connection listeners, why do you think most men avoid fiction? Is it just because we're from Mars? What makes a work of fiction worthwhile for you, and how do the criteria differ between the sexes? Can clever marketing alone increase male readership? Or is it just a question of, you can lead a man to an author, but you can't make him think? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK, the number to call to join in the conversation. And we'll be talking about that. I'm being slightly facetious, but it's a very real phenomenon. And we'll be talking about it with two acclaimed writers of fiction shortly. But first, I'd like to introduce Rob Williams, who's creative director of Penguin UK, which has recently launched a campaign to get men reading fiction. Rob Williams in London, how are you?
Hello there. I'm well, thank you.
Good. Now, tell us a bit about this campaign you've got going.
Yeah, certainly. We've just launched a campaign based on independent NOP research, taking the truth that those guys who do read have long kind of held dear, I suppose, that that men who do read are more attracted to the opposite sex. So what we've done is try to bear that out by getting some independent research done, and it does bear it out. We've got some quite startling statistics.
What are they?
80% of women said that a man could increase his chances of getting a date by talking about a favourite book. One in three basically said that men who read books are more attractive.
But are you talking about books? Are you talking about fiction? Or are you just talking books in general?
Well, women talk about fiction, which is very, very interesting. Women who responded to the poll, what they think is a sexy book and what men think are sexy books to be seen reading in public are very, very different things. Women, in fact, almost invariably went for fiction titles, whereas men didn't. And when they did, they seemed to choose the wrong fiction titles, which is very interesting.
Well, so what you're doing is you're running a poster campaign?
No. What we're doing is we publicise the results, and we basically, so we got women to tell men what they think, essentially. And then every month, starting in June, there's a Good Booking Book of the Month. That's the name of the campaign, is Are You Good Booking? And you can sort of check it out at www.goodbooking.com. Every month, we have a Good Booking Book of the Month. If you're seen reading that in public by as a male, by our Penguin spotter, a very attractive young lady will be going around the UK. And if she spots you reading that book in public, then you'll win £1,000 on the spot.
That's pretty interesting idea for a marketing campaign. In other words, if you're reading, it's a Penguin title because I mean you're promoting your books,
yeah.
Right?
Nick Hornby 31 Songs is the first title.
Well, how interesting. We had Nick Hornby talking about 31 Songs on this program a mere seven months ago. Yeah. So you're sitting there, you're reading 31 Songs, and if your spotter finds you, then you get £1,000.
Yep.
And you get the phone number of the girl who spots you?
Well, the idea, obviously, is that what we've done is we've told guys that women are out there looking for the man with the penguin. So they might not get a grand, but they might just get a phone number. And it's all very tongue-in-cheek. It's all very playful.
But it's based on something that obviously the Penguin is very concerned about, which is that at least half of men are not reading fiction. And that is a lot of folks who are potential purchasers of your books.
That's right. There's a much, much broader issue. I mean, we're one of the biggest book brands in the world, obviously, and we do feel a responsibility to sort of grow the market, really. And that 40% statistic is from the Literacy Trust, which is quite startling, really. I mean, we forget, I think, in publishing that we are talking to a tiny, tiny segment of the population, certainly in the UK. And, you know, lots of publishers have lots of meetings and wring their hands about, oh, well, you know, this segment doesn't read, this sector doesn't read. And we content ourselves with talking very well to the people who we know very well. But, you know, that number's only going to go one way, I think.
John, we're going to have to let you go in a second, Rob. But what I'm very curious about is, what do you think is the reason why men avoid fiction? And we're talking, of course, about serious fiction, because, I mean, obviously, men, when they do buy books, mostly nonfiction, but they also like their detective stories and so on, some science fiction. But why do you think they don't buy fiction?
I think that an awful lot of men like to get something instantly from what they're reading, which is why they gravitate towards nonfiction. The idea of living in the imagination maybe hasn't been hasn't been something they've grown up with in the same way as teenage girls seem to, for lots of reasons, I think. And I think, you know, that to say that the books aren't out there is, you know, isn't wholly true, but there is something in that. And I think probably the biggest thing from my point of view is that the guys don't see them as relevant to their lives. They're not instant. And what we've tried to do with this campaign is to, in a very playful way, is to make them appear relevant. A publisher is talking to me in my language, and almost give people permission, you know, to pick up fiction and get something tangible from it, hopefully, whether it's a phone number or £1,000. And then hopefully once you're in and the product delivers, then what we're trying to do is really give these guys a book-buying habit rather than just buying two a year.
Rob Williams, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Rob Williams is the creative director of Penguin UK. The Hey Good Booking campaign is running there now. If you're going there on vacation, Connection listeners, over the summer, find out what book it is, and maybe you too can win £1,000. There's a link to the Good Booking website at our website, theconnection.org. And now I'd like to introduce my guest for the rest of the show, Adam Langer, who's in the NPR Bureau in New York, has written plays, short stories, and now a novel. His new book is called Crossing California. It's been called the Jewish version of The Corrections, or Philip Roth Meets the Simpsons. Adam Langer, hello.
Hello.
And Karen Joy Fowler joins me from the studios of CSUS in Sacramento, California. She's the author of several works of fiction, and her latest novel is a New York Times bestseller. Congratulations. It's called The Jane Austen Book Club. Karen Joy Fowler, hello.
Hello.
Now, Adam, as I was describing you, I was saying your book is being called The Jewish Corrections, or Philip Roth Meets the Simpsons. And I know.
I'm being marketed up the wazoo. Yes.
I know. But the thing is, according to the market research, saying corrections, saying Philip Roth, saying Simpsons, men will know the Simpsons, but fewer than half of them will know what we're talking about when we say corrections or Philip Roth. Does that surprise you?
Well, I think it's very clever from a marketing standpoint to try and pick something that's very familiar and something esoteric. I mean, a lot of male readers, even though that may be a small portion of the population, will probably latch onto something with Philip Roth. And then you kind of get a broader audience through The Simpsons as well. I mean, anything is obviously going to be incredibly reductive when you reduce it to maybe a 3-4-word description. But people are looking for something to latch onto. They're looking for some sort of comparison. And if you say Philip Roth, you say, oh, must be something Jewish in it. You're saying some Jonathan Franzen, you say, maybe a little intellectual. And you say Simpsons, you say, it must be funny. And you put it together, and then you have a nice-looking blurb that hopefully attracts a few readers, and maybe a couple of them will be male.
But the reason I was asking the question was more to say, are you surprised by this notion that so few men read non-genre
fiction? I'm not. Largely because in my previous life, before I was a published novelist, which happened a couple of weeks ago, I was the senior editor of a magazine called Book. And that was supposedly the magazine for the reading life. And we did tons of consumer surveys on this very question. And if anything, the statistics I heard thrown out this morning were a little optimistic. And when we were doing surveys, it was more about maybe 30% of men reading fiction, as opposed to 44, which I believe was the number you called out. So I was well aware of this problem.
Karen Joy Fowler, is that something that you were aware of, that this men don't read fiction thing? Are you surprised by it? Are you surprised to learn about it?
I think that I've seen a real change in the 20 years or so that I've been publishing, and that 20 years ago when I published my first novel, there was a kind of relief, I think, on the part of my publishing house that my protagonists were male, that there were the book focused on two men, although it was a historical book and it was a fictional book. And when I published my second book, which had an almost entirely female cast, there was a lot of concern that I might have had male readers and that I would now be losing them. And with my third book, it seemed to me that nobody cared a lot anymore, that the figures had sort of started to come in, that they did initially surprise people, but that kind of response was to think, oh, well, apparently you can have a career without men reading you at all. Carry on.
Adam, when you were at Book Magazine, did you take this knowledge and use it in actually trying to boost your magazine's sale by aiming it at women rather than men?
Yeah, it didn't work so well, as our magazine is now defunct. But the thing was, it was kind of an odd situation because we were a magazine that was originally staffed largely by men. There were three men in the editorial office, and then the statistics came in, and we said, oh, we better start writing a lot about Anita Shreve and Kay Gibbons. So we did a lot of that. And then we did further surveys that said women were far more likely to read a male or a female author, and it didn't matter to them much one way or the other. And men authors were far more likely to read male authors than female authors. But since we had a largely female readership, we could ease up a little bit and decide we could try and concentrate on good books as opposed to focusing on what we thought that the, you know, our target market 40-something woman in Iowa would be reading.
Do you have a sense of, when we're talking about men and their poor reading habits, I mean, men are obviously reading fiction. I mean, are they all reading genre fiction? Do you make a distinction between your fiction and genre fiction?
My own personal fiction? I don't try and think about it that much when I'm writing. I'm just writing to write and writing what amuses me and entertains me and I find satisfying in a way. I'm not writing mysteries or thrillers that the people who sit next to me on airplanes read. I mean, one thing I was thinking about when I was coming into the studio this morning is I was looking at our president and I was looking at our first lady, and it seemed to be a marriage of kind of this quintessential non-reader and the quintessential reader. So you had a president who is very, very arrogant about not reading and a first lady who's very involved with books and literacy, and I thought that was just an interesting dichotomy.
A former librarian, if I'm not mistaken. That's a very interesting observation, Adam. No wonder you're a novelist. Connection listeners, we're talking in this hour about men, the reading gap. Men just aren't reading fiction. Why? 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK is the number to call to join in the conversation. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. We're talking in this hour, listeners, about the reading gap. It's real. The statistics are accurate, and they're on this side of the Atlantic, on the other side of the Atlantic. Men don't read fiction, particularly serious fiction. And it's odd because it's a wonderful time to be reading fiction, and a lot of it is being written by men. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Eric is calling from Chelmsford, Massachusetts.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Just wanted to say the reason why I don't really read fiction is because I need to read something that I can use today, especially for the businesses that I run. And I think that fiction, for me, is more of a waste of time, unfortunately.
Now, That gets to the heart of the problem. What kind of businesses do you run?
I run actually three businesses. One is a training and consulting company in the IT space, and the other is a DJ school as well as a mobile DJ company.
Karen Joy Fowler.
Yes.
Now, Eric just lays it right out there. He's busy.
He does, doesn't he? That's a hard thing to respond to. I think that people are enormously busy. That has concerned me sort of across the sexes, that people just don't seem to have a lot of spare time of any sort anymore. But I don't imagine that men are any busier than women. So women are still finding fiction useful, at least in terms of, maybe getting away from the day-to-day stuff and having a kind of adventure that you aren't having in your ordinary life.
Adam,
so I still don't think that explains the gap.
Right. Adam, when you were running Book, I mean, did you come across this as an idea, as a notion, that men feel too busy?
Yeah, it came that the caller just reminded me when we were trying to get an interview with Colin Powell. And Colin Powell, we asked, well, we're doing a story on your favorite characters in fiction. And basically his press secretary came back, he said exactly what your caller Eric said. I don't read it. It's a waste of time. He reads some biographies. That's about it. And I hear that a lot and I find it depressing, not so much as a writer, but just as a human being, just thinking about that if someone doesn't have something that's a very kind of tangible, I can glean this piece of information out of this book and use it for such and such purpose, then it's a waste of my time, not understanding that reading literature can be kind of a very enriching experience, that you kind of something that develops over the years, not something that you necessarily get out of tomorrow.
Eric, is this a recent phenomenon with you, or did you not have the habit of reading when you were at school and not an entrepreneur?
No, clearly at school there was time for that. I think nowadays, I mean, I was even remotely interested to read The Da Vinci Code because that was historical fiction. But once I found out what were some of the historical components of that book, it was already familiar material to me.
But if you had time, do you think you would read?
I think so, but honestly, that time would have to be a lot more than what I have these days.
Right. We dream about what we're going to do on vacation. We dream about daydream. We're going to do about this and that. I mean, are there any books that you think, God, I'd really like to have time to read that?
Possibly The Da Vinci Code, just because my wife read it and so many of our friends, and they highly recommend it.
Okay, Eric, thank you very much for your call. As authors, Karen and Adam, I mean, just jump in and talk over each other if you want to. I mean, does it really affect you when you're writing to think that, the audience is going to be only this big or that big, or who's going to buy this, or do you just write?
I don't think that most writers think that carefully about who the audience is going to be. You're very involved in trying to write the story the way it seems it will be best written and entertaining yourself. And the question of who's going to read it, I think at least in my case, is one that I leave to other people.
Yes, seeing as I wasn't a published novelist till around 2 weeks ago, the question of audience wasn't really tip-top in my mind. Perhaps it may become so later, but basically I write as a reader, and I kind of liken writing in a way to kind of a form of reading, except the pages that you're reading are blank and you have to fill them all in. So it's a reading experience as much as it is a writing experience. But in terms of audience,
you never,
it was about...
When you're writing a scene and you want it to be funny, do you ever think, well, they won't get that?
Yeah, and then I read it aloud to my wife who says that's funny or that's not, and that's usually what I go with.
Right. Your first reader is always your best reader. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Doug is calling from Arlington, Massachusetts.
Hey there.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, how you doing? I own a company that markets books primarily to men, and it's called Modalit.com. And I have noticed primarily that even though we sell motor literature, we sell fiction. Most of the books that get sold are tangible how-to books, and that's just an undisputed fact, no matter how much we try to fight them or try to introduce other types of literature into the market. Not that people aren't interested in incredible tales, you know, people traveling the world, this kind of thing. However, it is true that the vast majority of the books that actually leave the shelves are books on the mechanics of things, or how things are done, or how one could actually get something done. Not that the buyer would necessarily even do that. They may not even repair their fancy car, but just to have an idea of how it operates.
So what you're saying, Doug, is that your experience, or your company's experience, is that men engage their imaginations by reading stuff about things they don't own, probably never would own, but it gets them going at a fantasy level, but also at a level of practicality.
You got it. That's exactly right. I mean, we sell a tremendous number of books on, for instance, Ferrari, but, I mean, I rarely see a Ferrari on the road. However, just kind of, you know, people, they just want to kind of see and look, and it's a different type of imagination. It's interesting that you mentioned Colin Powell, because, of course, he's interested in cars as well, as you probably know. And I think it's not that men are banal or stupid or anything. I just think that men, they want a relevancy, a grounded type of peace. And if it's too abstracted away from their own life, then you're going to lose them.
Karen.
The main thing that I think that I read for is exactly what you're suggesting that a lot of readers avoid then, because I really want to see what it would be like to live a life very different than the one that I live, and to be a person very different than the person that I am. It seems to me to be the thing that I'm looking for most centrally. So, and I also want to say that this is just all kind of academic from my point of view, because, you know, I believe your market surveys. I take your word for it. But my own life is, I'm surrounded by men who read.
What does your husband read?
My husband reads a lot of genre fiction. He's a great mystery reader, and within that context makes no particular distinction between male writers and female writers, and male protagonists and female protagonists.
Do you read some of the books he reads?
I don't. We don't generally like the same books, but every once in a while, one of us is so enthusiastic that there's a crossover.
Because you know what I'm getting at here is there really a difference in taste that's kind of part of the hard wiring there, and just the difference in gender?
Well, he's always saying to me that he wants a book in which something happens, and I'm always offering him books in which I think many things happen, only to be told that nothing happened in that book. So I've yet, in 30 years of marriage, to entirely understand what that phrase, something happens, means.
Adam, do you have a difference between your partner and you in terms of what...
My wife, even though I'm supposedly the literary person in the relationship, my wife, A, reads a lot more than I do, and also reads a lot more nonfiction than I do. I read almost exclusively fiction, whereas my wife, who is a professor of political science for her job and for what she is interested in, reads a great deal more nonfiction, and often tends to find... She does read a good deal of fiction, but often tends to find it a bit frivolous and...
Well, in your book, Crossing California, what do your fictional characters read?
Well, I didn't think about this before I knew I was going to come on the show, and then I started thinking about it, and I realized that the women in my book are far greater readers than the men. The women are reading Virginia Woolf, they're reading G.K. Chesterton. One of the characters has named her son after her favorite author, who is F. Scott Fitzgerald, whereas the men in it largely are, when they do read, they're reading it for very kind of goal-oriented reading, which sometimes involves pornography that they read. And when they're not reading that, it's often a book that's presented as a prop. So it's someone trying to look impressive who's reading Jack Kerouac's The Dharma Bums, or someone trying to look very sophisticated by reading Samuel Eliot Morison's Oxford History of the European or the American People. And it's the women who are actually seem to be reading and the men using books as props. But I wasn't thinking about it when I was writing it, but it just seemed to happen that way.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Eric is calling from St. Augustine, Florida.
Hello.
Hi.
I was calling, I guess, with a question or observation. I have kind of a unique perspective because I have a master's in English and am a novelist, aspiring, but I switched occupations and now I'm an occupational therapist, which is in a healthcare field with a strong psychological basis. And what my studies in literature taught me was that the difference between literature and genre fiction is a sense of character and that human interaction. And if you really get beyond, if you look at psychological and sociological literature, beyond the cheesy Mars and Venus stuff, men really are less comfortable and less likely to think about relationships and talk about relationships, which it almost, if you look at that, it seems to almost set up this push men towards these different types of genre and nonfictions, which is probably why women find it so attractive that a man does read literature, because it does show that they are thinking about a relationship and concerned with that more than the average male. I mean, would you agree? Or?
Well, the first thing I'd say, Eric, is have another career switch and be a literary critic, because that was really clear and very interesting. Karen, do you agree?
I think Adam should be the one to take that question about what men want and think.
One thing I wanted to focus on, which your guy from Penguin UK was talking about, and this kind of enters in what Eric was saying as well, was the idea that women find male readers sexy. And I think there may be a little change in the atmosphere coming because something I read for entertainment value are a lot of personal ads. And if you look, I've noticed this over the past couple of years, now almost every personal ad where it's men seeking for women, every man talks about the books that they read. Almost as if they're kind of target marketing themselves as Penguin is target marketing its readers. And when you say what do you read and to try and make yourself sexier, there are a lot of authors that seem to come up. I mean, Nick Hornby comes up, Jan Martel in Life of Pi comes up, Jonathan Franzen comes up. And so maybe there's hope yet.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Eric, Eric, you're still here. Good. I think you do make this interesting point, though, between genre fiction and regular fiction in terms of the complexity of character, if I've got you right.
Yes.
And you think that that's why men are more likely to read genre fiction than, say, Jonathan Franzen.
Yeah, and I think men are more comfortable dealing with concrete ideas and realities. And if I could give an example of a book that I saw a lot of men that I know who don't read fiction read that I thought was a well-written book, was Cold Mountain a few years ago. And I thought that was a very well-written book with some nice literary themes. It was relationship-driven, but it had that historical perspective and that sense of history, that sense that, as I think an earlier caller talked about, that they were learning something. And so it almost had the hook, that Civil War hook, to get you in, and then it had these deeper literary themes, it had the relationships, and I thought that was a very good hook to get people into, I think, a pretty literary book. And I saw a lot of men reading that I don't normally find reading fiction of that quality.
Eric, I want to thank you for your call. Cold Mountain, Charles Fraser's book, is one that went through my mind as we were preparing for this program, and the other, of course, was the Cormac McCarthy phenomenon. The guy came virtually out of nowhere and then, between Blood Meridian and the Border trilogy, found millions of readers. And no one could be more self-consciously literary than Cormac McCarthy. And he was dealing with complexity, but also kind of in a genre way, too, because these were Westerns. Karen.
Yes. I hear the distinction of sort of high literature being about character and the genres being about plot is one that I hear a lot, but I'm not entirely comfortable with it. I think that frequently, I mean, if we take the mysteries again as an example, a lot of the series involve a single protagonist, and so if you read the same author and you read in the same series, you get a very involved with a particular character. Oh, the Patrick O'Brien books are maybe an even better example, that that in fact you engage very strongly in a way that you can't in a single book. And so I guess there's something more complicated going on about whether books are about relationships or whether they're about character.
Aita,
but I think,
I'm sorry,
I
go
think
ahead,
that... That, you know, one of the things that you begin to do when you read these series is follow the arc of somebody's life and get much more involved in the big story that covers that person's life over several books, and much less involved in the particular plot that's driving the one book that you're reading.
Adam, do you note the point about complexity of character, and then go ahead.
It reminds me actually of a conversation, not to name drop, but I was interviewing Harold Bloom once, and he was the professor from Yale, da-da-da-da-da, and he was talking about why Shakespeare was the greatest author ever was because of the complexity of his characters. He created the most absolutely identifiable characters in English literature and in English English-speaking culture. And I said to him, I think I agree with you that it's true that he's created the most recognizable characters, but I also said, what do you think about my argument that the second most recognizable characters were created by the cartoonist Chuck Jones, who invented Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny, who were, I thought, the most kind of recognizable characters next to Shakespeare, and he didn't much go for that high culture, low culture agreement. So I kind of think that there must be more to it than the complexity of character. There's something else going on.
Well, what do you think it is?
Well, I mean, it's characters obviously part of it, but then it's when you're reading literary fiction, it's kind of almost an entire world that you're getting involved in. You're immersing yourself into somebody else's world. And yes, the characters must be incredibly believable, but it's situation, it's atmosphere. There are a whole lot of things at play here.
We're talking in this hour, Connection listeners, about why men don't read as much fiction as women, why fewer than half of men actually read fiction at all. We're trying to pick it apart from a literary point of view, pick it apart a bit from just the gender difference point of view. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK is the number to join in the conversation. Regardless of your gender, what do you look for in fiction? What is it that you like? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, the numbers to call. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is The Connection. We're talking in this hour with authors Adam Langer and Karen Joy Fowler about the very real and observable phenomenon that men don't read fiction, for whatever reason. And Karen Joy Fowler is, of course, the author of the Jane Austen Book Club, which is on the New York Times bestseller list for the last 6 weeks. And book clubs are, I think of them as a woman thing. But in your book, you actually have a male character. Now, did you feel you were going on thin ice there, putting a man in a book club about Jane Austen?
Well, yes. I mean, it is a work of fiction, after all. I do help facilitate a book club through our local bookstore here in Davis, where I live, and it's open to the public. So we pick a book and announce the book, and it'll be advertised for a bit, and anybody who wants to come in and talk about the book is welcome to do so. But what we generally have time after time is a fairly stable group of women who come in, and every once in a while we'll pick a book thinking, you know, men never come. Men never come because we're picking the wrong books. We're picking books that they aren't interested in, or we're not being open and friendly. And so we'll desperately try to pick a book that we think the men will be unable to resist. And yet, time and time again, they prove us wrong.
Now, do men, when they meet you, I mean, at book signings and whatever, are they saying they're going to, you know, they buy your book? Are you surprised by that?
The very first thing I did with the Jane Austen Book Club was to pass out galleys in Oakland, California, and because the books were free, I had quite a nice line waiting to get them, almost, probably 9 women for every man. And it was very, very striking to me because every single man, without exception, when he picked up the galley, said, I'm getting this for my wife or I'm getting this for my daughter.
Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, and they're buying Playboy to read the articles. Is that the deal you're getting?
Well, I would hope. I took them at their word. You know, there are, of course, many men who love Jane Austen and are willing to talk about it for hours, but I guess they are a subset.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Denise is calling from Weymouth, Massachusetts.
Hi. I'm a mom of a 2-year-old, and I have a career, and I also don't have a lot of time to read, and I also read a lot of how-to books and books about raising children, but I yearn for the novel and for fiction, and I dread going into bookstores and seeing what I'm missing. And I recently went on vacation, and I got the novel, and it was gripping, and I was on the airplane, and I wanted to get back to my rental car.
What was the name of the novel, by the way, Denise?
It was a Maeve Binchy novel, and it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't that creative, but, you know, Maeve Binchy, she's gripping. And I don't understand why men at least aren't craving that or missing that. You know, they don't, is it a creative thing? I mean, they seem to be adventurous and they want a bungee jump, and why do they not want that adventure?
Adam, stay with us, Denise. Given the choice between bungee jumping in New Zealand and reading a good novel, what's your choice?
I would be really scared of bungee jumping into New Zealand. I'm actually kind of, I don't even like, you know, flying on DC-10s, so I think I'd pick the book.
It could be a book about bungee jumping. It could describe it so well you thought you were there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's,
So, Denise.
Yeah.
Okay. How many books have you bought for your husband down the years and had him actually read?
Well, you know what? My husband's a poet, and he's very well read. So I'm not talking about my husband.
Okay.
I must admit, he doesn't read a lot. I mean, we have a 2-year-old. He doesn't read a lot of fiction, but he just got the tapes of The Grapes of Wrath, and he listened to them on the way to work. And I must admit, within a week, he finished all the tapes.
Right. Okay. Denise, thank you for your call. To two authors. Book on tape, listening rather than reading. Do you think that that's the same experience?
Karen?
I think it's a very different experience. What about you, Adam?
I actually can't listen to books on tape. I lose focus immediately, and I just haven't done it. I listen to a lot of old radio theater tapes because, for some reason, those capture my attention more. But, you know, the 16-CD James Patterson set, I just can't get my head around it.
I listen to the many, many, many tape version of the Endurance. Again, we're back to nonfiction, but it was so incredibly gripping. I was driving for hours and hours and hours, and when I finally got to where I was going, I drove around several more blocks for several more minutes so that I could hear what was going to happen next.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Bill is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I just wanted to add something, actually, sort of onto what Denise was talking about, things that capture men's attention. Mainly, I think it's television. My wife and I have recently gone on what we're calling a TV diet, and I've noticed that my reading has, my fiction has increased tremendously over the fiction that I read before. Primarily before, I'd read a lot of computer books and things that would help me out with my job, and now when I know the TV's not there, I'm looking for some kind of pleasure reading, something that will take my mind away from my regular work. So,
is that the South Beach TV diet?
not exactly. You can have protein with this diet.
So by changing, I mean, this is the notion that you can read serious fiction, but it is also a leisure time activity.
Right.
And once you decide to detox from television.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's sort of a time-releasing issue when we realize that we have more time for things by, you know, taking away things that don't really mean that much, such as TV, that we have time to expand our minds and enjoy things like some pleasure reading of fiction.
Bill, I want to thank you for that call. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Jim is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Jim?
Yes. I'm calling because I'm wondering if there isn't a connection between the fact that the male is more apt to be or to have attention deficit disorder, and therefore the male is looking for something that's more stimulating, the speed of a motorcycle, the TV show that's exciting, the movie that's exciting. I find it harder to sit through an entire novel, an entire book. I wonder if that's been considered at all.
Do men have attention deficit disorder in the magnitude that we're talking about, more than half the men, or in Adam's suggestion, less than 30%?
Jim?
I think that statistically, males are more apt to have attention deficit disorder by about 4 to 1, I think. I'm not an expert in this, but I've certainly done some reading. My son is autistic, and there's a connection there. So I really think that men find it harder to get started and to maintain reading a long novel or a fiction piece.
Jim, do you do much reading?
I don't do a lot of fiction reading. I'll do how-to books, a lot of reading on the Internet, doing research on autism and different things like that.
All right. Jim, thank you very much for that call. Adam, the notion of different sense of time, though, I mean, to be serious about it, men tend not to be, except when they're, you know, watching sports, I suppose, interested in concentrating in this way. And that's something that, you know, goes back to when you're young and you're schooling.
Well, I actually, yeah, I mean, we placed some of the blame in one of your previous callers did on television. I placed some blame on high school, too. Because the way I was taught to read in high school, I actually don't think I actually knew how to read till I was in my 20s, like actually read a novel and know how to get what I needed out of it. We were taught to prepare for standardized tests by reading the answers first and then searching in our like paragraph in our reading comprehension test to look for where the answer was. And we got awesome scores on our reading comprehension, but I don't think any of us could have told you what we had just read. But we could have answered that question.
Karen, do you agree that actually the problem for men may lie in the way literature, they first experience literature at school?
That's actually, I'm turning that over in my mind. I started reading fairly early, so by the time that I was in high school, I was already reading in the way that I still read. And I have often sort of imagine that people who are drawn to reading and that people who are drawn to writing had a similar early experience to mine, where you, the kind of reading that you do as a child or that I did as a child, where you disappear out of your own life entirely, and when your mother calls you for dinner, it takes you a few moments to remember who you are and who she is and where you are. So I can only sort of address this in terms of my own children, and it's been puzzling to me. I have a daughter and I have a son. My daughter is older. My son is younger. My daughter is a reader and my son is not. And I, I think that the way we exposed them to books was quite similar. And my son reads in exactly the way that Adam has described, sort of knowing there'll be a test afterwards and trying to read only those parts of the book that are necessary in order to pass the test, and skipping the book entirely. Mm-hmm. But he does watch enormous amounts of sports on television, and he said to me once, very, very hard thing to hear when your mother is a writer, that what he loved about sports was that there was no writer, mm-hmm. and that anything can happen, and that what he dislikes about books, and I think about fiction in particular, is that somebody has the whole thing under control and somebody has manufactured it.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. David is calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was raised in the 50s, early 60s. I actually lived in Africa. I was a boy. We didn't have TV or anything, so I learned to read at a really early age, and it's been a wonderful escape for me over the years. I read a lot of fiction. I'll pick up an owner's manual for a new whatever we buy for the house. My wife kids me about it, but you know, I say that's why they pack them on the top of the box. But I'm on the way to the eye doctor right now. I've got a book right here sitting beside me that I'm just taking just for something to read.
What are you going to read?
It's called Ghost Riders by a lady named Sharon McCrum. It takes place up all between Asheville and Boone, North Carolina, Revolutionary War, Civil War time. I met her last summer, actually, and she autographed this book for my wife, so I finally picked it up and started reading it. But
wait, when you buy a book, David, when you buy a book, I mean, do you even think about the gender of the person who's written it, or do you just buy the book because it looks interesting?
Absolutely not. Actually, I just finished a Mae Binchy book myself, and I would call that definitely a woman's book, but, you know, I'm confident in my own sexuality, who I am. I'm a male nurse, so I guess I'm all right. one of the other guys I work with, male nurses too, he reads as much as I do. We switch books back and forth all the time, a lot of fiction, and it's just a great escape because the job's stressful. It's a nice way to get away from it all.
What would you recommend to your fellow males? One quick title. What do you think would be worth reading, fiction, this summer?
Deja Dead by Kathy Reich.
Yeah.
Well, my husband is reading a Kathy Reich's book right now.
Yeah, they're great.
I don't know
books.
If it's that one.
Yeah, I'm actually Canadian. I've lived in the South for about 10 years, and I love reading about stuff around this area and learning, you know, more and more about the history and the geography of the southeastern states. So, and you can get a lot of that in the fiction. I don't know how true it is, but most of it's pretty close to what I've experienced here.
All right. David, thank you very, very much for joining us. Thanks. We're coming to the end of the hour, Adam and Karen. Let me ask you the same question I asked David to end it. If you have one book to recommend to a man who is not in the habit of reading fiction that will serve the purpose of both entertaining and maybe convincing him that it's right to keep reading, what book would that be? Let me go to Karen first.
A book that's just come out by a writer named Sean Stewart called Perfect Circle. Just think it's a page-turner, funny, scary, adventurous.
Adam?
I'm going to go back to the classics, and I think men should read more women authors, despite the fact that surveys say they don't. So I'm going to say Jane Eyre, which has everything that you want in a book, from adventure, suspense, romance. I think men should read Jane Eyre. It will change them a lot.
Adam Langer, thank you very much for joining us. Adam Langer is the author of Crossing California. It's been called The Jewish Corrections, Philip Roth Meets the Simpsons. Karen Joy Fowler, thank you for joining us. She is the author of the Jane Austen Book Club, which is currently on the New York Times bestseller list. Men Get Reading. This hour was produced by Kelly Jones. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Michael Goldfarb. I like to read. And this is The Connection.